Thank you. Thank you for inviting me back to the Lakehead Unitarian Fellowship. I was really disappointed that we didn't come east this year, so I couldn't visit you in person on my return trek as I did last year. We have all had to bear some challenges and disappointments with COVID-19, and I expect we're all counting our blessings that our life is as good as it is, all things considered. I invited you into this reflection with this quote from the Tao Te Ching. The Tao that can be told is not the eternal Tao. The name that can be named is not the eternal name. The nameless is the beginning of heaven and earth. There is a story that one day a seeker came to the Buddha and asked him, "Teacher, do we have a soul?" And the Buddha looked at him patiently, but sat in silence and did not answer. After a time, the seeker then asked, "Teacher, do we have no soul?" But the Buddha gave him the same response. The Buddha did not indulge himself in questions of the existence of God or of the eternal soul. His concern was relentlessly practical. Life is full of suffering. The cause of that suffering is our attachment to what is transient. On what lay beyond the impermanent world of ego and change, his attitude was simply, "First go there, then you will see for yourself." Do we have an eternal soul? Or do we die and our energy dissipates into the universe to dust, energy to energy? The Tao says that any description we give will not be big enough or precise enough to capture the truth. There are some things we cannot know. So Unitarians choose to use words we can understand and relate to. We affirm the inherent worth and dignity of every person, a statement within the human realm of understanding of existence. For a large part of Unitarian Universalist history, our forebears believed firmly that we had a sacred soul that would live on after we die. Unitarians said that the soul was divine and could not be condemned for eternal punishment. Universalists said that God was too good to condemn a soul forever and debated whether one went straight to God or had to serve a time in purgatory first to expunge our sins. I'm going to share my screen with you a bit. I'm noting that in 1815 to 1850, William Ellery Channing was one of the more prominent Unitarian ministers in the United States, coming out of New England, an area that was largely Christian in its Unitarian orientation. And he talked frequently about the spark of the divine in every person. They're already, in many ways, having somewhat of a humanist orientation, but they really firmly hang on to the idea of a soul during that era. By 1859, there was another set of principles developed by James Freeman Clark, and he talked about the fatherhood of God, the brotherhood of man, the leadership of Jesus, and salvation by character. Now, that idea really hung on for a long time, and the Ottawa Church put that right on its wall in their new building in 1900. Now, in 1917, I have the Universalist General Convention declaring a set of social principles written by Clarence Skinner. And this is really that message that we were getting from Viktor Frankl, the systemic nature of the situation that we're in having a big impact on us. He talked about the economic order, the social order, the moral order, of human law and action, hopefully would be an expression of the moral order of the universe and a spiritual order builds out of the growing lives of living persons, the growing temple of the living God. So there's definitely still God in that image and an idea that there's a spark in people that grows. You can see the language of our principle is not appearing yet. In the Commission of Appraisal of 1936, where they tried to find out what Unitarians agreed on and what they didn't agree on, we have this idea of the exercise of free of intelligence, and we have the highlighting of each person's own moral convictions and purposes, and we try to worship to strengthen the highest spiritual values of which we are aware. Still not that language. And in Toronto First, we've still got the same themes. In 1952, Dawn Heights, this is the wording in the matters of principle in the bylaws, the leading principles of the society will be the free exercise of private judgment and the preservation of personal integrity in the search for truth. Still not close to the answer of how we're going to describe a human being. The UUA at merger with the Unitarians and the Universalists have this statement dedicated to a free faith. We unite in seeking to affirm and defend and promote the supreme worth of every human personality and the dignity of man. There, that language is starting to approximate. It was that merger between the Unitarians and the Universalists that won us this language. And it was a dialogue at the time between theists and humanists, for sure. Then, in a bid for gender-inclusive language, the principles were democratically redrawn. So in the 1980s, the feminists in the movement said they were tired of the patriarchal language and they wanted the principles and sources to be redrawn so that they were including women. And that's when we got this statement that we still have today. Are you prepared to die? When I was about 21 years old, I was working my way across Europe. I left my job in Augsburg, Germany, and ran. I couldn't handle the expectations of drinking on New Year's Eve in a bar. I said a few goodbyes, gathered my belongings into my rickety old Renault 4, and set out for France. I had no real idea where I was going or what was ahead of me. It was an adventure, a very pleasant drive, and I enjoyed a tremendous feeling of relief that I had escaped and exhilaration at my current state of freedom. About 3 o'clock, the weather began to turn. Suddenly, I came upon a series of signs that informed me that the pass I was headed for was closed. There was no place to stay nearby. My map showed quite a detour down an unexpected route to the nearest hope for a hotel. For the first time, I felt a little frightened, but I plucked up my courage, turned around, and set out to follow this backup plan. As I did so, it began to snow. It was also getting dark. At this point, I discovered that my hippie-mobile did not have enough electric power to run the lights, the defrost, and the windshield wipers at the same time. I could only have any two out of the three. I also began to notice that the roads had no shoulders and no barriers, not like Canada. And if I missed my way, I could easily drive straight over a cliff into oblivion. I parked on the edge of the road, reviewing my situation, staring at the mountains and the snow in the evening sky. They were incredibly beautiful. And I realized it was quite conceivable that this night I might die. I also realized that if this were to occur, absolutely no one in the world would have any idea where I was or where to look for me. I saw what a speck of insignificance I truly was in relation to the whole scheme of things. There is a sense in which we are all ultimately alone, like this, confronting the vastness of the universe. The view from our particular perspective is totally unique. No one else experiences the world quite the way we do. We also seem to spend our whole lives longing for connection, a feeling of being a significant part of a larger whole. Are we alone, separate, or are we connected? Is it the uniqueness of our individual soul that is important, or are we part of a larger collective energy with no significant separate existence? I realized that I had isolated myself, cut myself off from friends, family, and support. Without those connections, I was nothing, just a speck of dust in the universe. I was fortunate to have the presence of mind to be able to face into my fear, name my reality. I decided the heater was the least essential appliance under the circumstances and drove off, freezing cold air from open windows, keeping my windshield clear, to rejoin community and find a safe haven for the night. So clearly, there is something, some spark of awareness, consciousness, that can recognize our existence, whether isolated or in relationship to family and community and the universe. I have noticed in the readings given to me to prepare for this sermon that there is some tension as to whether worth and dignity is inherent, just in us for all to see, or whether it is given to us by the way other people and our society treat us. Famous novelist Kurt Vonnegut suggested in an address to First Parish in Cambridge that dignity is something human beings give to each other. But surely that would mean that dignity was not inherent, but external, provided only by the gifts of others. Does that mean that the homeless people on the streets of Nanaimo don't have inherent dignity and worth because we as a society have failed to provide it to them? Clearly, our story by Viktor Frankl suggests they do have inherent worth and dignity, that anyone can transcend their circumstances if they stay true to that divine spark. Frankl resisted the cruelty because he didn't want to become a person like his enemy. He wanted to preserve his essential self. For me, this is a perfect example of what inherent worth and dignity really means. If we assume that Channing was right and we are all animated by a divine spark, then we all have the capacity to be good. But we also have the capacity to lose sight of that spark, to stop loving ourselves, especially in the face of brutality, meanness, trauma. We all see the consequences of our society's demonization of First Nations, Inuit, and Métis, and of our marginalization of Blacks and people of color. It is hard to keep a sense of worth and dignity and self-love and compassion in the face of such treatment. It takes tremendous strength of character to withstand the onslaught of hate and maintain one's internal sense of worth and dignity. It takes knowing and believing in who you really are. Our Indigenous people who grew up with the support of elders and with a concept of their own culture developed over thousands of years have shown us that the degradation and the treatment can be overcome. Healing can occur. Many of them are living from that deep inherent work and lead us toward a better world. Those who choose to walk in supportive community with people who will mirror to them a vision of their own divine spark do better. The focus of our Unitarian ancestors on character development helps us see that we can grow into confidence in ourselves and the values we have chosen to live by, especially when we have the support of a community. Our regard for another is the basis upon which a relationship can be forged. If we are dismissive, scornful, or judgmental, it is difficult to make a connection that will be deep or meaningful. However, when we assume the worth and dignity of another and affirm our own worth and dignity, we have the basis for mutual respect. My husband Ron suggests that we have to find the capacity to truly love ourselves first, to see our own worth and dignity. And it is this insight that allows us to have true compassion and connection to affirm the worth and dignity of others. Once we can truly appreciate the inherent worth of other humans, perhaps our next step is to expand the circle of love to include the natural world. Mary Oliver, in her poems, says that she looks upon everything as a sisterhood and a brotherhood, and each life as a flower, and each name a comfortable music in the body, a lion of courage, and something precious to the earth. The Tao that can be told is not the eternal Tao. The name that can be named is not the eternal name. The nameless is the beginning of heaven and earth. As the Hindus say, Namaste. The divine in me greets the divine in you. The inherent worth and dignity in me greets the inherent worth and dignity in you, whoever you are, all our relations.